listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is the Spirit of Life Metaphysics Radio Program, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Michael Kelly.
Good evening and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, May 8th. My name is Michael Kelly. I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, hello, Michael. You know, as always, I'm really happy to be here, and I'm extra special happy to be here tonight for Dr. Zach.
Extra happy to be here for tonight. Love to have a guest, especially a good guest, friend of the broadcast, longtime friend. Can't wait to that discussion. Thank you to those joining us live. We always appreciate your contributions. Always love seeing you. And thanks to those that take the time to catch up with us in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. We'll begin tonight with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief. 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will create self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. On to tonight's topic and guest, Dr. Zach Frame. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Michael. I am really excited to be here. Very excited for tonight's discussion. Thank you guys so much for having me.
Oh, thank you for coming on. I really am looking forward to this. As we were kind of talking about, I'll be a bit more of a layman, but I think that it's going to be something that's digestible and understandable, and I'm really looking forward to it.
If I can interject, everybody, we were talking before the program, and Zach and I were having a really good visit last week, and, you know, talking about the rites of passage through life, you know, and how things change, and get talking about Saturn and all these cycles, and I went, oh, that's a really good topic. So I know you've prepared some really good stuff for us tonight, Zach. I'm excited to hear this. I really am interested.
Me too.
I'm so excited. I think that one of the things that I just finished up the Cosmic Academy of Astrology. I'm working on my certificate of completion. I have to do 10 sample readings for folks, get some feedback, and submit that with my final exam in order to actually get that certificate of completion.
Wow.
But one of the things that I've kind of learned as I've progressed through the program is that it's, you know, the more you learn about astrology, the easier it is to just kind of get lost in space. You know what I mean? So then when you sit down to do a reading for somebody and you're like, oh my gosh, your Saturn is trine Mars and Pluto's doing this thing. And it's like all of this astrology jargon where if you're talking to other astrology folks, they know exactly what you're talking about. But if you're trying to bring it down, sometimes it can be overwhelming. It can be a lot. It can be dry. It can be technical, you know? So one of the things I really pride myself is finding ways to take some of these more complex topics and bringing them down so that the layman can, like, appreciate them. You know what I mean?
Well, that's appreciated.
One of the things that, just to kind of start us off, because we're all familiar with the phases of the moon and how we've got your new moon, your full moon, your first and last quarter, and they don't spend a whole lot – we don't really think about – the phases of the planets, because the planets undergo those same phases based on where they are at the time that we're born. And so there's an interesting relationship between the moon and Saturn. And the fact that it takes the moon 28 to 30 days to do one trip around the zodiac, whereas it takes Saturn 28 to 30 years to make one trip around the zodiac. And so when we're talking about how these the cycles of these planets impact our lives in a way through the cycle, through the things. And so the moon will represent our emotions. And so as the moon is journeying through the 12 zodiac signs, we're experiencing, you know, fluctuations in our emotions. We're learning how to navigate those different energies as it goes through the signs. And with Saturn will spend 2.5 years in each sign, whereas the moon will spend 2.5 days in each sign, you know, kind of going through there. And so Saturn is, he brings restrictions. He slows us down. He's the planet of responsibility. And so wherever Saturn is in your birth chart, that is an area of your life where you're more likely to be kind of held back. You're going to be behind your peers in this area of life because there's more work that you have to do in that area than other people who have Saturn in like a different location, you know? And so using myself as an example, and this will kind of segue talking to Vicky, Dr. Vicky and I were talking about, is like for me, my Saturn is in Sagittarius. And Sagittarius is free and it's higher education, it's exploration, it's, you know, movement and going beyond boundaries. It's like figuring out where the boundary is and then going beyond that, you know, Sagittarius wants to explore in that way. But for me, because my Saturn is there, my freedom has been restricted. And it's very interesting because even if you look natally, like I'm kind of, you know, opening myself up here, right? When I was a child, I had a lot of responsibility. I had a lot of responsibilities. The oldest of 5 kids, a single parent. My mom was a single parent and didn't really have a father figure in the picture, you know? And so I stood in for a lot of those roles as a young 12-year-old, you know? And so my freedom was literally restricted by Saturn, and I had a lot more responsibility, you know, than my peers did. You know, I had to grow up kind of a lot faster. And so there's just one example how that can play out. Other people, like I have some other folks who have that I know with the same placement, and it plays out. Their freedom is still kind of restricted in some ways, but the circumstances are completely different, you know. That's the thing about astrology, is there's a lot of ways that things can kind of play out. But anyway, so I guess what I wanted to kind of talk about is the cycles of Saturn, because it takes Saturn 30 years to make one revolution. There's a lot that happens. And if we're lucky, you know, we get a good 3 Saturn returns before we die, but you're pushing 90 at that point. You know what I mean? And so what we kind of say with the first Saturn cycle, and you'll hear people talk about their Saturn return, it's usually a very big moment in people's lives. There are some major changes that happen in people's lives around that age. So to anybody in the audience, or you know, Dr. Michael, Dr. Vicky, if you imagine what was going on in your life around the ages of 28, 29, 30, a lot of times people are buying their first house. Maybe they're having their first child. Maybe they're getting like a big career move. There's usually some kind of major change that comes about dealing with responsibility, because you've been doing this work like through that first Saturn cycle. And we're going to break that up too. Through that Saturn cycle, we've been doing this culmination, this work throughout that 30-year period. So when Saturn comes back around, there's usually some really big change that finally relinquishes some freedom. It gives you some freedom that maybe you haven't had for that first 30 years. And then whatever theme and however that plays out for you at 30, it will repeat 30 years later around 58, 59, 60, but in a slightly different flavor, you know? And then you have the third one. But within the one cycle, similar to the moon, right? You've got your new moon in the first quarter and the full moon. You have those same placements with Saturn, except they're going in 7 years. So like from the new moon to the first quarter, it's about a week. From your Saturn, the first Saturn to the first Saturn square, it's what we call that. It's a 7 year period. If you think about childhood, when you've got somebody who's born 7 years after that, they're having their first Saturn square, which is a point of crisis. It's a point where, you know, you've been living your life this way for so long, but something changes at that first Saturn square that causes you to kind of question or to push a boundary or to challenge what you've learned to that point. And there's an interesting point. I took a class a couple of months ago, Bruce Lipton, his Biology of Belief. He's done a lot of work with stem cells, understanding that the DNA that we have is not as, it doesn't determine if you have a genetic predisposition to something, you're not doomed to that. That it's actually the environment that turns genes off and on, which was very interesting information. But through his lecture, he was talking about our childhood programming and how when we are born, when we come into this planet, the first 2 years of our existence, we're in delta. We're in delta frequency. That's deep sleep. We are mostly unconscious. But from ages, two to seven, we're in this hypnotic theta state. It's why children are so easily suggestible. They're downloading their programming for the rest of their lives. Everything that they see, everything that they hear, everything that they come into contact with, it's they're under hypnosis. And so that's why they learn it so quickly. They're using both sides of their brain at the same time. And they only last for a while during the childhood. And that's when they're, again, downloading all of their programs. But what's interesting is at seven, they start to use their alpha, which is a little more conscious. And what happens at 7 years with Saturn cycle? It's that first square is a point of crisis. And so that is a really interesting correspondence that I kind of, so then you go to the Saturn opposition. It's another, now we've got like a fruition. Think of the 14-year-old, right? He is definitely got an opinion and he is in opposition to whatever the rules are. It doesn't matter what the rules are. He's going to be in opposition to them.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, you go to another 7 years and now you're at age 21. We're finally a freaking adult, but we've got the crisis of being an adult, not really being an adult. You know what I mean? And so there's this other, you know, moment of crisis in the Saturn, and then you have the return, you know, at the end of the 30 years. But that's kind of the way it goes. The first cycle, the second cycle, same thing, but now you're an adult. You've been through it all once. You've seen it. You know, you've heard all the stories and done all the things. But when you get to the second return or the third, that's old age. Now we've had our childhood. We've lived our adult life. We've done our career. We've had our experiences. But now when we get to the old age bit between 58, 59, 60 and beyond, you know, that's when, again, same lessons, all the same things, you know, it's just more or less your last 30 years. And so that's, don't really like to use old age. I like to think of it as the wise age. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Just depending on which astrologers, you know.
A question, if I can. Can somebody Please. Have as a Saturn return when they're like five in their chart?
No, because like if you are born, wherever you are, like wherever Saturn is when you're born, that's your starting point.
Oh.
So the Saturn return is wherever it, whenever it returns back to its starting point from your natal chart.
Oh, okay.
And where Saturn is in its orbit when you're born is, I think, correlated to the astrological signs as well.
Yes, sir. Excellent. So, like, you know, wherever, like right now Saturn is in Pisces. Right now Saturn is like 16 degrees Pisces. And so wherever Saturn goes, you're going to be doing work in that area of your life. For example, like for me, Saturn is rolling through my second house of personal finances. And let me tell you, I feel the squeeze. You know, I'm okay. I'm fine. You know what I mean? But I've definitely had to, like, you know, I don't need the YouTube subscription. I could probably let that go. You know what I mean? I haven't used Hulu for a month or two. I think I can let that go. You know what I'm saying? Like when you start kind of like looking more analytically over that, over your stuff, it's, you know, you start making some choices. But wherever Saturn is, he's going to kind of squeeze that area of life.
I'm going to throw this out at you. You know, I was thinking back to when you did a reading for me and you ran a chart for me as well. Uh-huh. Under the natal planets, I'm saying Saturn being assigned to Sagittarius.
Say it again.
Under the natal planets column for Saturn, it's associated with Sagittarius. It says, I think, three degrees seven.
Okay, so that's like you and I. We share that placement in common. So. Like sometimes the way that has played out for me is like a restriction to my freedom. You know what I mean? But it can impact, Sagittarius is higher learning. It is, exploration. It's philosophy. Right. It's,
I get behind that.
And so when you have Saturn there, maybe there's some limitations to those higher minded thinking, especially during childhood, you tend to notice a lot of the natal potential is more obvious when you relate it to childhood, but the themes, I mean, it's pretty consistent throughout our lives, especially as it repeats.
You know, one thing that I was also thinking about with the cycles of Saturn is, two things really, I guess. The first was how much it correlates and kind of tracks with the, you know, human growth and development cycles. You know, there have been a lot of people that talk about those, you know, crisis points, which are developmental hurdles that are necessary. And it kind of seems to coincide a lot with these 7 and 28, 30 year cycles. The other is what kind of impact it would be on like a generational thing. You know, you and I think are probably similar generation. So it just made me think about that as well. And did you say the Sagittarius would be disinclining, you know, like things like philosophical stuff?
Oh no, Sag loves that. Like Sag will eat that. They're very, very high-minded and like all about truth. You know what I mean? Like they want to get to like the say a lot of Sag energy wants to be right. You know, like they would argue with me about that. But you
that
know,
doesn't describe me at all. I don't know. but here's the thing: what is truth?
I think you had a great question with, in traditional astrology, they would only use the observable planets. So that was, you know, Mercury, Venus, Mars, Jupiter, and Saturn. And Saturn often represents boundaries, in astrology because, it was physically the farthest boundary that we could see. And so, like, when we, talk about what Saturn's and he'll put some boundaries up. The outer planets, Uranus, Neptune, not Pluto, because Pluto's not a planet, but Pluto, I am of the age where Pluto is still a planet. I'm a team Pluto. but it's a dwarf planet. Did you know, I'll say this, is a small tangent, the moon is actually, the Pluto is smaller than our moon.
Yeah.
So if you ever wondered about maybe why it was declassified, it's smaller than our moon. So
itty bitty.
But the outer planets, those are the generational planets. Like when we talk about And I can't remember that, like, which ones are which off the top of my head, but I know that, like, the Pluto and Libra people, like, those tend to be, like, the boomer generation. And then Pluto in Scorpio, I might be off. I think it's before that, Pluto and Virgo. I don't know. Pluto and Scorpio tend to be the millennials. And now Pluto in Sagittarius are some of the next generation, because Pluto spends 30 years in a sign.
Yeah.
So it tends to move a lot slower. So the rulership of those outer planets rules a generation more so than just a person, but they will still have impact.
That is interesting. Definitely kind of what I was thinking about too. What do you think it is about the millennial sign placement that makes us so much better than the other generations?
There's so many, that just kind of make it stand out. I'd probably go with the Scorpio and Pluto because, Pluto is death and destruction and psychological trauma, but it's also psychological healing and rebuilding. It's the phoenix, you know what I mean? It's tearing it down so that we can bring it back better than it was before. And I think that there's our generation,
I think, yeah. Well, yeah, we've had a nice mix of events so far in our existence. We've had to rebuild a couple of things, but I play around, of course, Dr. Vicky. I would never denigrate you. I would definitely denigrate Gen Z and Gen Alpha, though. That's just my duty and my role.
So Dr. Jerry has said, seriously, Dr. Michael, better than the best generation ever, like her and I up there? Okay, so here's a question for you, Zach. Dr. Jerry has said her Saturn is in Virgo, and she says she's heard of it. It's all about health. Does that make sense to you?
So Virgo is Virgo gets a reputation for like perfectionism. It's very discerning. Sometimes they, get a reputation for being like really judgmental but Virgo wants to optimize. Virgo wants to like make it the best. So sometimes, maybe they're a little abrasive with that, but it's always coming from a good intention because they want to make the situation better. So like in medical astrology, Virgo will rule the digestive system. And Virgo inherently is a nervous energy. It's the least grounded of the earth signs because it's ruled by Mercury. And when you think about how Mercury moves through the solar system, it only takes 88 days for Mercury to go around the sun one time. Oh. And so it's like zoom, zoom, and then it's in retrograde. It retrogrades 5 times a year. So it's like up and back, up and back, up and back. And it's so fast. And so when Gemini and Virgo are two signs that are ruled by Mercury, they have a really hard time staying focused. It is a really tough energy. So anyway, with Saturn in Virgo, Virgo can represent your health, but it's really more of a sixth house thing. Virgo can represent an area of your life where you're very particular, where you're very type A, where you tend to be just a perfectionist. Like whatever area of your life Virgo is ruling, that's how that will play out for you. With Saturn in that area, it could, maybe you have a hard time actually being that particular. Maybe you are less likely to be outward about your discernment. Maybe you hold back, organization, or something to that effect. But if you had Saturn in your sixth house, that could, be an indicator for some challenges, health challenges later on. But it would really just, you always want to take the whole chart into consideration because the way everything is in place with each other, it can do some stuff.
Well, you also mentioned.
It's not just one direct thing. If Virgo's in Saturn, this is that. It's you have to consider
Yes.
Like the other energies in play.
For sure. And like everything, everything that has, that makes an aspect to something else. So you've got like five major aspects. Trine, sextile, squares, opposition. But like in the context of the moon cycle, your conjunction is the new moon. Uh-huh. Your square is either like the first quarter or last quarter. Your opposition is the full moon. The sextile is a waxing crescent or a waning crescent. And a trine is a waxing or waning gibbous. Mm-hmm. And all of the planets make those phases with themselves and with each other. So when you pull up your birth chart, you're actually looking at all of your planets, all of the signs, all of the houses, and all of the angles that they make to each other.
Well, for feedback, Jerry has put in the chat, that is 100% true, Dr. Zach. She said, I am a perfectionist, and everything else you said, and my health challenge is my gut.
How about that? Wow.
So you called it.
Man. Yeah. Okay.
Did you mention the sixth house earlier when you were talking about Virgo?
I did.
That's me. That's interesting.
Your sixth house is ruled by Virgo?
Yeah, I'm looking at my. This has been a very interesting. I'm just kind of referencing my birth chart that you had sent me way back, you know, a year or two ago, and that's interesting. But you know, also I was going to say, I'm thinking about what you said earlier on about how genetics and DNA are triggered by environmental factors, and I would think that those environmental factors might shape kind of some of the different influences of the different signs. Would you say that's about right?
Say that again?
Environmental factors such as, you know, maybe family life, maybe what's going on in the natural world, socioeconomic.
To anybody who is interested, there's a couple of, have two good book recommendations. One's not related to astrology at all. It's just a book that I always recommend to folks. It's called A Framework for Understanding Poverty by Dr. Ruby Payne. And it's just a really great book that kind of explains some of the socioeconomic class differences and the unspoken rules that are necessary to exist in each of those social classes. And I mention that just because, you know, like when we're talking about how those kinds of things might impact a sign, it would be anybody, you know what I mean? Like anybody who has a certain type of upbringing or a certain type of experience or, you know, trauma bucket, like it's there, it's going to have an impact. So, but I think, you know, certain things are worse for others. For example, you know, a Sagittarius is going to need their freedom. They are going to need their freedom to make their choices and make their decisions and fall on their face on their own and not feel judged for it. Like they're real sensitive to judgment. They're very sensitive to, and so for, you know, they're going to be really active. They're going to need to be doing stuff. They're going to need to be going places and like explore all of that. Whereas, you know, a Taurus child, they're probably going to be totally homebodies and okay with that. You know what I mean? They're not going to need to do a whole lot because they're going to be cool just to be chill. If they're comfortable, they're winning. You know what I mean? And so a situation where, you know, neglect is happening, like I think that would be a lot harder for a Sagittarius child to deal with than say – not that neglect is okay. Don't neglect your child no matter what they're saying. You know what I'm saying? But like in terms of how the trauma would affect them, I think some signs could be impacted more deeply.
That's interesting.
So
Book that I was going to mention. Sorry. Go ahead. We have a delay. The other book that I was going to mention was called The Astrology of You and Me by Gary Goldschneider. And it talks about astrological relationships between all the signs. It breaks down family relationships, work relationships, the roommate of all signs. You know, so like you can, if you got a coworker who's a Capricorn and you want to know how to get along with them, read about the Capricorn coworker. And then you can learn how to navigate that energy. If you want to know, how do I raise and manage this Sagittarian child, go and look on the section on, you know, the Sagittarius child, and then you can get some real insight on the personality stuff. Go ahead, Vicki.
Well, some of the limitations I have about, you know, astrology kind of personality traits is my granddaughter is a Capricorn. And she's 16 now and acting like a Capricorn. Like, I mean, oh my, that Capricorn edge. And there's, so if I can share with people, Capricorn men and women, in my view, are kind of different. Men, of course, are a little more outwardly about it in their presentation of self. They like control. They like nice things. They can be control freaks, you know, that kind of stuff. The women can come across as the B word, you know, like it's that real sense of self and entitlement. And correct me if I'm wrong. Well,
that's always prominent as a teenager anyway.
But it's this, you know, holding your head really high and so on. And I thought, oh my, that is so Capricorn.
Capricorn, yes. Like Capricorn wants to be the best at what they do.
Yep.
So we're talking about Saturn, right? Saturn is ruled by, Capricorn is ruled by Saturn. And so Saturn, the principles of Saturn, of responsibility, of hard work, of following the rules, of doing things the way they're supposed to be done, of climbing the hill and being on top, like all of that is infused into Saturn, or into Capricorn, because it's the ruling planet. Saturn rules Capricorn and Aquarius, which is kind of funny because, you know, Aquarius, when you think about how the signs progress, you know, Capricorn is at the top of the chart. That is, you know, the rule, the structure, the law, the man, like, you know, but then Aquarius is like the rebellious and the overthrowing, that we just don't want to do this anymore. We're tired of the rules. Screw the rules. We're not doing this anymore. And that's like, but Saturn is still the ruler of Aquarius, not the modern ruler. The modern ruler is Uranus, and he spends on his side just to be different, but that's okay. Sorry. Anyway, so I think I digressed. What were you saying, Dr. Vicki?
Did we lose you?
Did we lose you?
Might be muted.
I was muted. I'm sorry. I was saying that's interesting you mentioned Aquarius, because both my daughters are Aquarius.
No.
But I have an Aquarius.
Are they inherently rebellious?
Each in their own way, yeah. Yeah, in very different ways. Each of them in their own way. They like to keep the peace. They don't like necessarily trouble. They go with the flow. You know, their rising and moon signs are in very different placements, which, of course, changes that effect. But they are very world aware and don't, of course, that could be their mother too, but talk about environment and the nurture thing. But yeah, they go by their own piper. They don't,
which, you know, within reason is not a bad thing not at all. I mean,
no, it's great. Well, I'm a Scorpio with a Gemini rising and an Aquarius moon.
Nobody's perfect. But you know, real quick before we move on and forget, Jerry had asked on the title of the second book.
I was trying to put that in there. I got confused. I'm really bad at managing the chat and then actually trying. You guys like make it look so easy, and I'm really bad.
No,
at
that's called multitasking. I can read it. I can't write in the chat, talk, and read it at the same time.
No, I can do it while I'm fumbling my words and making a fool of myself. I can do that. That's a layer of multitasking in and of itself.
The second book, it was called The Astrology of You and Me, and it's Gary Goldschneider. I think it's maybe $10 or $12 on Amazon. I do all of my books on like a Kindle or an e-reader because I just prefer it that way, and I can carry my whole library with me.
Yeah.
On my iPad, you know. But that's one of the books that, you know, if you are into astrology and you enjoy, like, learning about the people that you're working with and, you know, that sort of thing, it's a really handy reference guide because, you know, everybody knows people.
So,
you know.
If I understand you correctly, whatever sun sign you're born under is basically where Saturn is lined up.
No, your sun sign marks where the sun is at your moment of birth. So whatever, like, you know, if you are born in March, you're probably going to be a Pisces. You know, that sort of thing. But Saturn is where, like, because, you know, it's still doing its thing. Like, if you were born today, your Saturn would be in Pisces. But if you were born, I don't know, 3 years ago, your Saturn would be in Aquarius. Right. Because it takes Saturn 2.5 years through the signs.
Got it. I get it. Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah.
No, I'm understanding that. No, I get the rotation now. I was trying. I'm a little bit confused for a minute, but asking that question, you answered it.
Perfect. Yep. And all of the planets do that. And when they make their return, there's usually a point of, like, reevaluation. You know, Mars makes a return every 2 years. And so Mars is it's aggression. It's anger. It's how you assert yourself into the world. Conflict. It's decisiveness or divisiveness, pulling people apart, cutting things away. You know, so when when Mars makes a return, there's a chance to kind of reevaluate your actions and look at, you know, what is it that you want to accomplish over the next 2 years? Because whatever you seed for that return, it's going to grow and bloom and manifest and come to fruition over the next 2 years, just like when we, you know, do our new moon intentions. It's the same situation, except we're not really working with the moon. We're working with Mars. You know, we're trying to put some kind of plan into action. Cool thing is, like, even if you don't do it consciously, it still happens. You know what I mean? So, like, whatever we're doing, it, you know, those seeds kind of get planted. That's the thing about astrology. You don't have to pay attention. But if you do, you know, you can really work with the energy.
So Audra has made a comment. I'm always trying to learn more about interacting with my Virgo teenager in a way he relates to. She's Libra, with a Libra sun with Libra in many other places. So we're similar in our interests, but very different in our ways of expressing ourselves. Can you add anything to that?
Let's see. She's a teen. It's really helpful when you, like, knowing your big three. It's funny because, like, in America, we're a very egocentric country, right? And the sun represents the ego, which is kind of funny that we would, like, lead with our sun sign because we're all a bunch of egos running around, you know. But back in the day, your rising sign was much more prominent because the rising sign will represent your physical container, like you. Say it again.
I'm a Gemini in that way. So.
And then the moon is the internal expression of your soul. And so, like, knowing all three of those, you have a better idea of compatibility. The challenge with Virgo and Libra energy is that the elements aren't really compatible. Like, and it's not that's not to say you can't be friends or you can't work or you can't, like, have a good relationship. It's just that, you know, think about dirt, you know, earth, and then think about air, you know, it's like it, sometimes they're just going to miss each other. It's like, you know, you're having this communication back and forth, but maybe it's not landing because there's, you know, some challenges to, you know, just the elemental aspect of it. I would say though, like with Virgo kids, they really want to feel helpful. They want to feel useful. They want to be of service. Virgo is the sign of service. So if you're having a hard time like bonding or having a hard time, you know, give them something meaningful to do, not busy work, because they'll see right through that so fast and they'll come at you like, mom, like you don't want busy work, but something meaningful that you guys can like do or work on together or something like that is typically a helpful way to work with Virgo energy.
One thing, and not a charisma, my mother was a Virgo. I know lots of Virgo women, and I find them different from Virgo men. But
yeah,
my take on an observation is Virgo women might really try to analyze a situation. They come up with three possibilities, study them, make a decision. But if somebody comes along and says, oh, did you think about this? They discard it and go with a one of three. and then they do it anyway, but, you know, because until they mature and get older. And Libras, well, again, I find that they make decisions based on like two things, you know, it's this way or that way, this way or that way. And sometimes it gets wishy-washy and it takes a long time to make a decision. But fairness, equitability, all those things, going with the flow, don't make waves. Does that make sense to you?
Yes, ma'am. That, I think you definitely described the Libra energy. One of the things that happen, Aquarius and Libra are the two most challenging positions for the sun. Mm-hmm. And the sun in Aquarius is said to be in detriment. Whenever a sign is in the opposite of its natural rulership, it's a challenging position for the sun. It just means it has a hard time expressing itself.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean like cursed or anything like that. It's just like the energy isn't where it wants. The sun wants to be in Leo. You know what I'm saying? Like that's where the sun wants to be. Yeah. Capricorn is, or Aquarius is cold. Capricorn is cold. So the sun doesn't do very well there. Now, I don't know why the sun is in fall in Libra, but that is worse or more challenging than being in detriment. And so Libra folks are the most indecisive folks because the sun in that position needs the other to like see itself. The Libra folks like tend to need to bounce those ideas off of other people to really kind of be able to reach that decision. So I'm on your page. I agree. I think the indecisive.
You know, one of the things I did, and again, I'm not an astrologer by any stretch because it's too much for my brain, but I started thinking it in terms of seasons, and that summer people need to be around bright, airy things. They thrive on brightness, flowers, color. Their houses need to be in order, you know, like summertime. They tend to be the ones who go through, you know, light deficiency during winter, low vitamin D. Fall babies, this is autumn. It's time to go to sleep. You know, it's time to rest. Oh, indecisive. And the winter babies are tough. You know, that strength, that power, that toughness, that edge, that survivor. And then springtime is that starting to wake up. You know, that awakening time. So when I started to look at it that way, of course, because I'm not an astrologer like you, Zach, I started to say, oh, there's something to that in how I interpreted when people are born. So when somebody, a client or somebody says, you know, because I write down birthdays and I do a bit of numerology, and let's say they're born in March, oh, a near awakening, you know? Mm. But that also can mean these things, because I look at, oh, the impression is springtime, April, May, springtime. If somebody's born in July, I say, oh, you need to have bright, airy things around you. And so far in my life, it's played out.
Well, I hate to be the rule breaker. Okay. I'm a July, and I tend to like darker colors, less light, love winter, my favorite season, hate summer.
Hey, come on, get real. You're in Florida.
Yeah, I despise it.
So what's funny, like, Dr. Vicky, is that, like, you're not far off from the astrological roots. Because the signs are the seasons. Like when they say, oh, it's Aries season. Like, well, it's literally Aries season. The seasons were broken down because you've got each sign has a modality, a polarity, and an element. And that has everything to do with the season. Aries brings in the spring. It's a cardinal sign. Mm. March 20th is when we bring in Aries, and Aries gets things started. It initiates things. Like, they want to get the party on the road. That's the initiator.
They Taurus, sure do.
Right? Taurus is a fixed sign, and it comes in the middle of spring. It wants to sustain the spring. How many stubborn Taurus people do you know? How many times, you know, how easy is it to get them to move beyond wherever they are? Gemini is the third season of spring, and it's mutable. The mutable signs are wrapping up the old season and getting us ready for the new. Mutable signs are very flexible, very easy to handle change very well. They're really good at going with the flow, and not a lot shakes them up, you know, and that gets repeated. The same thing, like Cancer is a cardinal, Leo is fixed, and Virgo is mutable. And you just kind of repeat the cycle. And if you pay attention to mutable signs, you'll notice the weather goes crazy. It's like hot, cold. Mutable signs tend to be hot, cold, just like the weather.
And you know, I have found it fascinating in my life how many Leos I've known in my life and friends with, and several are born August 21, right on the cusp. And they're strong natures, very intelligent, very intellectual. And there's all these qualities about that I find so attractive, right? They're,
like there's a butt coming in here somewhere.
They're more left brain than right brain. But they want to be right brain. And it's the late blooming in art. That's what I found consistent with all of them. Does that make sense, Zach?
Which sign?
With that Leo to Virgo cusp.
So it's really, it is very interesting. It's like, I was having a conversation with somebody today, and yesterday they told me they were born March 20th and that they were a Pisces. And then I started to have an existential crisis. Because when I was like, wait a minute, everything I was looking at says that March 21st is the first day of Aries. And then I'm really confused because I'm like, well, I thought Aries brought in the season. And if the first day of spring is March 20th, how is he not in Aries? And then I like actually go back to the chart and I scroll back through, and the sign switched at 3:03 a.m. On March the 20th. So if he was born before 3:03 a.m., then he was a Pisces. He was born at 1:47 a.m., so he was a Pisces. But it's just funny because it's like 3 hours of March 20th. Any other time you're born March 20th, you know, in that year, you've been an Aries.
Oh. You know,
all those cusp days.
That's interesting. Know,
it switches. You've got like down to the minute. They're like, and it was a more existential crisis because I knew two people who were born on the winter solstice and they're Sagittarius. And I was so confused because I'm like, but Capricorn brings in the solstice. Capricorn brings in the winter. What is this? And it's like, well, Capricorn doesn't actually switch. It doesn't switch signs until like 10 o'clock that night. You know what I mean? So if you're born during the day of the solstice, you're probably going to be a Sag.
You know, one thing I want to touch on while we still have a few minutes left, Dr. Zorin had put in about some astrologers reversing the signs for the summer southern hemisphere, which, yeah, what are your thoughts on that, given the different seasons?
I don't know. The ecliptic is what it is, you know what I mean? Like the signs switching the signs. I guess if the stars, like if you're in the southern hemisphere and the stars rotate backwards.
Well, I was thinking it would apply more to, you know, Dr. Vicky, you were talking about the seasonal, you know, influences. I think that would, I mean, obviously spring and fall stay the same, but for Vicky, your point, you know, you're going to have summer and winter, et cetera.
In a different placement.
That would be interesting.
But, you know, this is a really interesting thing that we don't think of, and I'm glad Zoran brought that up, because if you think about interpretations of numerology, for instance, we're translating English. And so our understanding or interpretations of numerology are done by basically an Anglo perception. But if you get truer, there are other languages that have other numerics for their alphabets. And it would be a completely different interpretation. So does the 1 to 9 still apply? Sure. But how you get those numbers would be different. So because we do a, you know, how many letters in the alphabet, A to Z, but they have different numbers of the alphabet. So when you're doing a southern hemisphere versus northern hemisphere, there might be a completely different take. I don't know.
I don't know if this is like on what you're saying or not, but like, for example, like the Hebrew alphabet, like they use the same letters, but they also represent numbers.
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure. Just yeah. I think that we have to always keep an open mind about how we interpret things. I really appreciate how you explain things, Zach, and your take on it. I know part of it's a lot of what you've been learning, but how you then interpret that and articulate to deliver it is something I understand. It makes sense. So I want to thank you for that. I had no idea 50 minutes went by so fast.
It's been a good discussion. I found it engrossing, and, you know, standard disclaimer that we don't, you know, it's hard to know. I think as an organization kind of put our stamp on anything definitively, but I find this just utterly fascinating, engrossing. I find myself just thinking about it, the patterns, and I enjoy that. Looking at the patterns, looking at different phases of life and how it makes you just think about those different phases of life, those different moments where we grow from one person to the next. And a lot of what you were talking about with the 28 and 30 year cycles, I think that applies to a lot of us. I know it definitely does me, the 7 year cycle. I remember exactly how I changed when I was, you know, 7 going to 8. It was a very big shift. But this has been just a really interesting discussion. I've just been having a great time listening and kind of engaging. It's just been fantastic. I love it.
Well, I'm thinking about what I went through at around age 28 to 30. Mm-hmm. And then again, when I was 60, you know, 58 to 60. Whew, big shifts. Uh-huh. And of course, you know, going to be 69 right away. And I say, oh, that makes sense. So I want to thank you for that.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to wrap up here soon. Did you have any last thoughts, Dr. Zach?
I am just really thankful that I get a chance to, like, you know, come on the program and geek out on astrology. There's so many different directions and avenues and things that you can talk about with astrology. So, you know, anytime I can share my knowledge, I always appreciate it. Thank you guys for having me on. It's been wonderful.
The thanks is ours to give, because this has been a wonderful discussion. We love having you. I know people love listening to this kind of this explanation of something that's a very fascinating field. And I know that you had some recent, you know, you've been going through some coursework. You're almost at the end, and we, you know, wish you the best across on that last finish line.
Congratulations.
It's going to be coming up soon. And we appreciate you sharing that with us.
You know, I want to reiterate to everybody, because to me, you're a bright, shining example, Zach. It's you're not shy about telling people this. Zach has multiple sclerosis. He's in a wheelchair. It does not stop him. And this doesn't minimize the hardship he's been through. It does not stop Zach from continuing to learn, continuing to grow. He gets out. He does readings for people when he can at certain little fairs. He's always online. He has clients. And by the way, can people contact you for a reading, Zach?
You can. I have a Facebook page. It's The Optimist Universe.
Okay.
That is my, and just find me there. Send me a message. I don't keep it super updated. I'm actually working on another website, but
okay,
it's in development.
So you, to me, are an inspiration. I mean, everybody has their challenges, and I'm not disregarding everybody else's challenges by any stretch. But I love you. I admire you and respect you in the highest regard. So in other words, I'm trying to say that it's a privilege to know you and having to become friends
through
the school.
Thank you so much.
And for coming on the program again, you're just this encyclopedia. Stuff.
And, you know, I have to echo that. And, you know, my favorite thing is you know so much, but you're also such a bright, you know, wonderful soul, kindness, humor, engaging. You know, you face challenges, but, you know, some in this life would become bitter after those, but not you. You're still that kind of, you bring the light into the proverbial room. And I really appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much. Hit me up in 10 years. Hopefully we'll still keep that going.
I love it. Well, thank you, everybody. And, you know, this night has gone by fast, but all great discussions do. It has been engaging. It has been insightful. I have loved it. Thank you much. And you can come back anytime. In fact, we might have to, you know, force you to come here later on this year. But, well, it is that time of the evening. It has been just a very fast track. I'm still just catching up on some of the chat that's going by. It's been a very active chat. So thank you, everybody, for your contributions. I appreciate seeing you. And, Dr. Vicky, any last thoughts before we wrap up?
Don't let them push you around out there.
Always good. I love it. Well, thank you again, Dr. Zach, and thank you, everybody, for joining us. We hope you join us next week. And until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.